Hani Al-Khatib mit Melt Me auf Flux FM. Der Kalifornier, der mittlerweile von L.A. aus operiert, wird heute Abend im Franz Club spielen und dort seine neue dritte Platte Moonlight vorstellen. Schon jetzt ist er bei mir im Studio und wir quatschen ein bisschen über seine Zeit als Art Director und finden vielleicht auch heraus, ob er seine Musikerkarriere einem Designer gleich durchplant. Wir sprechen über Aufnahmesessions zur aktuellen Platte, blicken aber auch nochmal zurück auf Album Nummer 2, das da ja damals ja von Black Keys Frontmann Dan Auerbach produziert wurde. Wir sprechen aber auch nochmal über die Wichtigkeit von Fehlern in einer digital optimierbaren Welt. Wir sprechen über das eigene Label, über RZA, GZA, Iggy Pop und Tom Waits und vieles, vieles mehr. Zunächst aber sage ich nochmal hello and welcome. Honey.
Hey, what's up?
How are you doing?
I'm good.
How's traveling been so far? Where are you coming from today?
We got into Berlin last night.
Oh, cool.
So I'm actually like, it's a fresh day.
Ah, a relaxed musician for tonight's show.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's our first day off in a while, so.
Cool. And did you have the chance to enjoy it a bit, at least?
A little bit. I mean, we've been to Berlin quite a bit and spent quite a bit of time here last year and the year before. And so, yeah, it was sort of just really like a chill mellow day walking around.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Well, congratulations on Moonlight again. It's been out for a few weeks here in Germany. It's been put out in end of January in Germany. And I've read that you wanted to use the studio experiences that you've made with the first two albums and kind of combine them while working on that third one. What were the most important lessons that you learned when recording Will the Guns Come Out and Head in the Dirt? And how did you use that knowledge for Moonlight, the new album?
You know, when I recorded the first one, it was sort of my first experience in recording anything really. So there was no real rules or I didn't know the proper way to do anything. And then, come the second record, that was more of a live recording and in a proper studio with musicians that, you know, were vets in terms of making records and working with Dan was just kind of like eye opening in the sense of, you know, trying to understand like a big production record, but doing it in a way that is very spontaneous and kind of easy. And so I just sort of took, you know, the kind of no rules experimentation aspect of the first one, mixing it with, you know, just technical knowledge and just sort of trusting your gut and trying to blend that all together.
Yeah, because that's what I've read, that trusting one's gut is something that you've probably learned from working with Dan Auerbach, because he sometimes finished the sessions after 20 minutes and said, yeah, we're good for a coffee right now. And you were like, what?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, I would show them a song and after two takes, we'd be done. Cool. You know, and it's like, all right. You know, you're thinking about it and you're just kind of amidst all this nice gear and, you know, very talented musicians and stuff. And then you're like, wait, that's all it takes? Like, really? We spent 10 minutes recording. Okay, that's it. It's on the record forever.
Yeah. You know? But I mean, that's a question of philosophy maybe as well already, because you got to decide if you want to aim for a perfect sounding record or if you want to aim for a record that has mistakes on it. And that's something that is becoming more and more valuable these days, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, my record, this last record, or all my records, in fact, have lots of mistakes all over them. Yeah. And that's something that even as much as I dissect it or try to pull it apart and put things back together, I leave those moments in because those are just kind of the spontaneous magic moments that you get from live recording. I mean, you can't ignore the kind of unexplained kind of thing that happens with some recordings, you know, especially when it's live.
Yeah. And I think in a world that could be optimized digitally or with records that can be optimized in every little corner of the music, it's really important to make records like that again, because you can listen to those records more often than to a digitally optimized record that gets boring after five times of listening to
it. Yeah, it's about restraint, I think, in those cases.
Mm-hmm. What I found out about you as well is that you've been working as an art director for a skateboard company. You were designing a lot of things before you entered music professionally, although you've always made music.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But when I look at your record and the stuff that you've done with the cover and with the videos that you put out beforehand to tease on the record, I was thinking like, oh, this guy is really thinking of his own art like a designer, maybe. He's thinking a few steps ahead, you know? It's not just the music that you're thinking about in the cover artwork.
I mean, sometimes the artwork comes before the music in my mind.
Ah, see.
Really, I utilize, like, the visual aesthetic to encapsulate the overall concept or mood of the music.
Ah, see.
And so, like, when I think of an album, I think of... you know, how is it visually presented? How does it sound? And what does it mean?
Oh,
and
wow.
In order to tie those things together, you can't ignore, you can't ignore your album art. You can't ignore your stage show. You can't ignore the gear you use on stage. You can't ignore all these little details that make up the bigger part.
But the way that you describe it and the way that you think about it totally reminds me of designers that I know, because it's like really working with a mood room or a mood board or whatever you want to call it, where you just throw visual ideas into a script or something, and then you'll take that and look at it again and see which mood the next project's going to be in.
Really, it's basically about collecting your inspirations and influences and then kind of, you know, pulling things that you enjoy from that and filtering them through your own mind. And then what comes out of that is sort of this weird, like, soup of what you just are influenced by, really.
Yeah.
And it can be anything. For me, like, you know, a painting is just as inspiring as an amazing song that I've heard. You know what I mean? Like, it's all the same. Like, a photo is just as important to my songwriting as, you know, hearing like an old jazz record where I like the recording. You know what I mean? It's all the same to me.
Yeah, I think that's an advantage for you, because you can get inspired by much more things than other musicians, maybe, who are just into music and not into the visual parts of art as well.
It might be just that training, you know, like an open-mindedness to look at things differently.
Yeah. But at the same time, you were thinking of musical moods as well when recording the album. I've read that you were thinking of Tom Waits, Iggy Pop, and RZA being in the studio together. What would their record sound like? And that was something like the imagination that you used for making that album.
Yeah.
Is that something that you do more often as well? Is that some part of your creative business?
It's part of it. I mean, I listen to all types of music, and everything, you know. I'm one of my favorite records, or, you know, in general, is Midnight Marauders by Tribe Called Quest. Like, that's hands down maybe probably the album I listen to more than any album ever. And you know, that isn't the type of music I make. So I mean, how that kind of influences me is more like kind of conceptually or philosophically influences me.
But sometimes when we were listening to Moonlight right now, we were listening to the GZA remix, in fact, but this is a song that totally, one can totally hear that you were and are into hip hop when one's listening to that song, because it's the way it's built. It's more like a track than a song, I think.
Yeah, and that song is one of those things where when I made the track, I wrote it on acoustic guitar, but in my head, it sounded like I wanted it to sound like a, like, two-bar sample with a breakbeat underneath it that was, like, slightly off. And then as I thought of that, then I kind of thought, you know, what would RZA do? Like, how would he approach this, you know, rock song, really? And then, you know, by just the wonders of the world and coincidence, I was able to work on a project with GZA separately of song.
Ah, see. Because I wanted to know how did he come into this.
So it's like, talk about like full circle. It's like I made this track, you know, thinking of rap music, right? And then, like, flash forward, you know, it was really a couple weeks after I recorded that song when GZA is actually in the studio working with me. So I was asked to work on a song that he did with for his new album, and it's called The Mexican. And really, I was asked to kind of contribute to, like, the production of this record that he was doing. And you know, amongst the collaborators is like Tom Morello, like kind of random people. Like,
wow.
It's sort of kind of a strange mix of people. Anyways, yeah. I was part of it. I started recording and, you know, he was happy with what we were doing. And moments later, I was just like, you know, if I don't play him my music now, I don't know when I'm going to have another chance. So I played him. I asked him, I said, hey, do you want to listen to my new record that I'm working on? And he said, oh, yeah, of course, you know, play it for me. So I play him some stuff. And instantly when I played Moonlight, he was bobbing his head. He sort of was, you know, kind of commenting on some of my lyrics and stuff. And I kind of took that as a sign that, okay, maybe he likes this. I'll just throw this out there. Hey, do you want to, since I worked on this for you, like, would you be into doing a verse for my song?
Yeah.
And that's how it happened.
And this is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Hani El-Khatib mit Moonlight im GZA Remix. GZA hat da nochmal drüber gerappt, nachdem Hani ihm bei einer Platte aushalf. Eine tolle Nummer ist das geworden. Und Wayne Sweeney macht auch noch mit auf dem Song. You just mentioned that the guitar is played by a pretty famous man as well.
Yeah, Matt Sweeney, right after GZA's verse, has a little guitar riff at the end.
Cool,
you know?
cool.
So. And that was another thing, by way of just him hanging out in the studio that day. I played him some songs and he said, oh, I could probably do something on that.
With the fact that you've worked with Dan Auerbach in the back of my head and with the Black Rock Productions in the back of my head and listening to that song right now, have you ever thought about grouping up with more rappers maybe to produce beats for them? Because that would be something that you could do, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just did a song with Freddie Gibbs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, rapper from Gary, Indiana. So, like,
It's already not, done.
Yeah, like...
Been there, done that.
No, I mean, it's something that I'm sort of venturing into, but I don't want anything to be forced, so I'm not, like, really looking to... If it happens, it happens, you know? And it's kind of like these opportunities, you know, like this GZA one or the Freddie one or whatever... I just want them to happen naturally. I don't want to, like, seek it out.
Yeah. I mean, you seem to... This whole concept seems to work for you, right? to wait for the fatefully working moments and just turns up and fucking raps something.
I just figure, like, I have the... Sort of my philosophy that... Of just doing whatever you do and eventually... You know, things will catch on.
Yeah.
And it'll work out. I think is... really important for my sanity and my own creativity.
A friend of mine once described this phenomena as with the word mainstream, and if you imagine the mainstream as a river that goes through a town like in a very straight way, and you as a musician, you have to build your own stream, which has curves in it, and sometimes that curve of your career may be the same curve that the mainstream has in that very moment.
Yeah.
Then you're a lucky man, but you shouldn't try to get into the mainstream.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. How important actually is being the co-founder of the record company that you're putting your music out?
That's a huge aspect of why I'm kind of doing this and why I find enjoyment in it. It's because, you know, I have a home where I can release and, you know, ideas and product and music, that interest me without any question.
And you don't have to discuss too much.
I don't have anybody that,
right?
Yeah, there's like nobody to answer to. Like my partners are usually on the same page as me.
Cool.
You know, there's times where we have disagreements, but that's normal, you know?
Yeah.
Like that's just all in part of it. But it's great. I mean, to be part of a record label where I can release a record like mine and then the following day release a record like Bad, Bad, Not Good, which is like a three-piece instrumental, kind of almost jazz-based band. And then...
You have the ability to think about the product and the design of the product for your band, for the other band, because you've learned that stuff way back. So that's I think that's a perfect mixture, kind of.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, on the selfish side of things, it's like... When I feel like taking a break, I still can, you know, work within music, you know?
That's true.
If I feel like taking a couple months off and sitting in the office every day and working with other musicians, I can.
Yeah, there won't be anybody be like, honey, you can't do that. You just put the record out. You have to tour. You have to tour. I mean, no, you don't have to. You just can do whatever you want. So with all the experiences that you've made in the past in various fields, in various creative fields, I would want to suggest that you put out a book one day, and it's gonna be called Hani Elka Tips for the Young Musicians.
Yeah.
Und wer heute Abend zum Konzert möchte, zu Hani Elka Tip. The title is a gift.
I'll take that.
Wer heute Abend zum Konzert möchte, zu Hani Elka Tip in den Franz Club, der kann mich jetzt anrufen unter 030 2000 9000. Berlin 2000 9000 ist die Nummer zum Glück. Wer durchkommt, steht auf der Gästeliste für den Franz Club und Hani Elka Tip. I just gave away some tickets, my man.
Great.
Thank you for visiting. And I hope I'll see you again soon. I mean, the next time you visit Berlin, you just come and visit us again,
awesome.
Right?
Awesome. I will definitely do that.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.